Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
For the last month, the nation's attention has been taken by what has been called Occupy Wall Street. That gathering has also sparked other Occupy demonstrations in cities across the country. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Now, some of those protests have been large, others small. In some cases, there have been clashes with police who attempted to clear the protest area. In Oakland, an Iraq war veteran was injured by a blunt object as police attempted to sweep the protesters from their encampment. Take a look at this phenomenon. We have in studio with us Salisbury University professor Michael Laughlin. Also, Bobby Hajir. He's a political science student at Salisbury University and an organizer of an Occupy Wall Street here in Salisbury. And also, Scott DeKuyper. He's a Lewis resident who says he was beaten by police while participating in the New York Occupy Wall Street protests, and he's been going up there regularly on a weekend. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in. And Scott, I want to start with you first because you've probably been there the latest. What is the mood like in terms of the Occupy Wall Street at this point? I know it's getting a bit colder up there. And what's the situation there at present? What's your sense about it?
Well, I think, Don, and thanks for having me. I think that the mood is upbeat, as it always has been. I think people are very positive. The people that I come into contact with on a regular basis are notable for their complete lack of cynicism, and so they're doing what they set out to do, which is to occupy, and they are looking into winter shelter, and they are dealing with the fact that that's coming on, and that they could lose the park at some point. But they really, it's kind of complicated, but because of the nature of the movement itself and the way that the GA works and the human microphone, which people are becoming familiar with, it's not like there's some grand plan that's, you know, deciding where everything's going to go. And it really is on a day-to-day basis. It's an occupation. It's not really even a protest in a formal sense. It's a movement. And so they're living their lives. And there's a whole bunch of us, thousands and thousands of us, that move in and out of the camp on a regular basis.
Now, I just said initially, actually, I guess it was Adbusters who made the initial call, put up some posters to get folks to get there. That was in mid-July, U.S. Day of Rage, an internet creation. They apparently spread the word, particularly through tweeting. And as you alluded to, there's the General Assembly there, which has been described, I guess, as a collection of activists, artists, and actually first convened, as I understand it, New Yorkers against budget cuts. They were actually talking about the city itself and the Mayor Bloomberg there. What are the people like there, and what is the organization process like there? I mean, we're all trying to sort of get a handle on what is it that we're looking at here, and I mean, who are these people? Do they have some sense about where they're going? What sense do you get, Scott?
It's fascinating. Nobody is really truly in charge. And of course, this is giving the traditional media, and a lot of us fits in that sense. Of course, they talk about being the 99%, but they're absolutely authentic in that. So the organizational structure is this very awkward, very painful, incredibly slow-moving form of democracy that is bottom-up rather than top-down. And that means that everyone gets a voice. And it means that anyone can be a member of that 99%. And that really, the 99% is based on a mathematical, an economical formula of the 1% and the amount of wealth that they carry as compared to the other 99%. But in fact, it means that anybody, I have cancer. I'm undergoing cancer treatment. So I can go up there and I can occupy as somebody who thinks that the healthcare systems aren't working for 99% of us. I could go up there as a businessman and an entrepreneur, and I could say, you know, I can see where the tax system is tilted towards the upper 1%. Anybody can bring anything that they see that's going on with this that basically breaks down to this general disconnect around money and politics. But even that's my opinion. I'm just one occupier. I don't speak for anyone else. And that's the magic of this movement. It's why it's so hard to pin down, and it's also why it cannot be co-opted by any of us, even those of us that are there all the time, and even the ones living in the camp. So it's this huge melange of people, you know, that have bones in their noses and tattooed heads, and to people like my wife and I, who are basically just small business people living in Delaware. We have college age kids, and we're up there for all of our own reasons, and everybody's welcome. And the other fascinating thing about this is that if you look beyond what their appearances are, and you start talking to them, you find out that they are incredibly well-informed. And some of the wildest-looking people up there, in fact, are erudite. They're studied. They know their facts. And it's a new sort. Even the anarchists are anarchists in an authentic sense. They're not necessarily about hurting people or burning down buildings and all of that stuff that the mainstream media wants us to think. They're about, you know, saying these systems aren't working and that they're anti-capitalist. It doesn't mean they're anti-people or they're anti-business or even profit motive, but they're saying the capitalist system is not working for them.
Now, we had, by the way, before I let you go, we have a number of confrontations, I guess, the biggest going on in Oakland, where we mentioned a moment ago that there was at least an Iraq War veteran who was apparently hit with a blunt instrument of some kind, still in the hospital, as I understand it. And I understand that you had your own experience with the police in New York. Tell us a little bit about that, because I remember early on there was an attempt actually to clear protesters off the bridge at one point. What was your personal experience? When did that take place, and what was that about?
First, let me say that Oakland is my worst fear, almost worst fear, being realized. The next escalation of violence being something like Kent State. And I think this is a – one of the things that I don't want to forget to say is that I forget the count now. At some point, we've gone, I think, 1,200 to 1,400 arrests. To my knowledge, as of last week, there was not a single incident of a protester acting violently, destroying property, or raising a hand against a police officer. And I think that's really important to remember when we have this discussion. It is truly a nonviolent group of people in a nonviolent protest, but it's a large group of people, and you know, anybody can show up, so things happen. But even so, we have been self-policing, and that hasn't happened. What happened to me, I wasn't at the Brooklyn Bridge. I wasn't there that day, but the Lieutenant Esposito, who was essentially the person in charge that day and that manipulated the protesters onto the Brooklyn Bridge for the mass arrests of over 700 people, was the same person at Times Square on October 15th, which was a rather large day in the movement and across the not just this country but internationally, and it was a real day of action. And to make a long story short, we were to head down 42nd Street. We'd been marching for 7 hours at this point, very peacefully, very few things along the way except for, honestly, some frictions created by the police. We have people in the marches that pace. We allow people to get through. We don't block the streets other than when we're crossing them. We don't prevent people from using the sidewalks. Again, very, very self-monitoring. And so what happened was, is we got to 42nd, where we were going to take a left and head down to Times Square. The police were there, and they said, "We want you to take 46th." Now, this is what happened on the Brooklyn Bridge. A few people up front were told one thing, but you know, you've got thousands and thousands of people behind them, and that message is not carried back by the police officers. And so, most of us, myself included, were like, "No, we have a plan. Let's stick to it. We're going to get to Times Square. We're tired. We're going to jump around and celebrate with other people that we're meeting there for about 15 minutes, and then, you know, the old guys like me were going to go home, and maybe the young people would stay in Times Square and party." But that was really the end of it. And the march leaders decided that, no, let's cooperate. They've cleared 46th Street, and so we decided to go up to 46th Street, and we went down 46th Street, and it was not actually cleared. The police tried to keep us off the road, which didn't make any sense. And then when we got to 46th and in Times Square between 6th and 7th there, we were penned in. And we were penned in by the hard barricades. And it was clear that it was a setup. And it was deliberately – honestly, I don't know what they're thinking, but it was trying to send some sort of a message to us. And it created a very, very tense situation that led to violence.
And now, did you get hit at all during that confrontation?
Yeah, I absolutely got the heck beat out of me. And to make a long story short, they had penned us in, and we were having conversations across the barricades, fairly reasonable. with many of the officers, and who are, you know, basically just following orders. And there's a real disconnect in the police force, but that's another subject. But so we're talking with the rank and file and some of the officers, and we're saying, you know, this is a nonviolent protest. You know, you just need to let us meet up with our other marchers, and this will be over in 15 minutes. You know, remove these pens. And then they brought in the horses and they tried to march us back. And at this point, there's no place to go. There's thousands of people behind us. And at some point, somebody, I believe the police, pulled apart the barricades, and a helmeted riot cop just starts hitting me in the head out of the blue. And he's off to the side. And later I've seen him on video doing this to other people. And he was restrained by one of the officers. But then they marched on us with the horses. And I made the mistake of yelling an obscenity at one point, and basically it was, you know, an obscenity saying this, you know, F you, stop hitting us, you know, pull the horses back, we're nonviolent protesters. So it wasn't like anybody was attacking anybody, and I was upset because I'm getting struck in the head over and over and over again, and the guy had to be restrained by an officer. And make long story short, the highest ranking officer in the NYPD apparently grabbed me and tried to pull me in. The crowd pulled me back. And then these other police just rushed in and just beat the heck out of me. And I went peacefully. I never resisted. And the second they got me behind the horses, they slammed me to the ground. And seven or eight of them, and you can see this in the pictures, jumped on my back and you know, really nailed me in the back with their knees. And I mean, we're talking about 1,200 pounds of men here and big, strong men. And I couldn't breathe and was given a concussion and several injuries. And again, you know, I'm not here to make a problem with the NYPD. It's just, you know, our nonviolence is evidencing this disconnect between them and nonviolent protest. And that was really the purpose. And it was a little more thorough than I would have liked.
Just quickly, were you arrested then? Or
I was arrested.
And what were you charged with?
I'm one of two people that day charged with felony charges. Apparently, I touched the lieutenant's badge, so I've been charged with attempted grand larceny.
And that's been adjudicated, or I guess?
It will be, yes.
Okay. Now, I want to also turn now to this, what we're doing here at home. And because one of the things that's really struck me is the fact that we've had a number of protests across the country. And Bobby Hizier, you're a political science, a student here at Salisbury University. So you've been involved in organizing local protests. What has that been like? Why were you inspired to do that? And what kind of response have you had in this community?
Well, from the beginning of the Occupy Wall Street movement, I felt a lot of solidarity with what they were doing in Zuccotti Park and then the expansion to cities across the country. So I felt that it would be important to get something started at the grassroots level. But I found actually that on Delmarva, particularly in Salisbury, it has been difficult to motivate young people to get them out and to really educate them about what the Occupy Wall Street protesters are really about besides what they hear on cable news networks. There were about 30 protesters that showed up in downtown Salisbury, and only two of us, I would say, were under 30 years of age. Everyone else was really in their 50s or 60s. And I think that just shows you that maybe in this area, young people aren't as politically active as they are in more urban areas. But that hasn't stopped us from trying to really get the message out there, trying to get young people, especially at Salisbury University, involved. And we're hoping to organize something soon. We don't have a specific date, but we'd like to get more young people out there. We got a little bit of media coverage by the local news networks, and that was nice. But we'd really like to get more than 30 or 40 people out there, maybe a couple hundred students, and show them that, you know, young people really do care about the things that are going on.
When you talk to your fellow students here, I mean, what do they say? I mean, beyond obviously the folks that gathered in front of Congressman Harris's office for the protest, what sense do you get about the students that you talk to, beyond just simply those who want to participate? What do they think of Occupy Wall Street?
To be honest with you, not a lot of them have educated themselves on the subject beyond what they've heard through mainstream news outlets. And to me, that's a little bit discomforting and a little sad, because, you know, even with me being surrounded by political science, you know, majors, even they have not concerned themselves with what's going on. And I try to just present facts and not color it with my bias. I just try to present the facts of what's going on to them. And as I tell them, they become more interested, but really, without it getting a more than just a couple of buzzwords on the news, they really haven't gone out and figured out for themselves what's going on. So really, that's what we're trying to do at this level right now, is kind of use social media, get out there, post some videos about what's going on nationally with Scott Olson, as you mentioned, the Iraq War veteran in Oakland, and what happened with him. I mean, you said a blunt object. I've been going around showing the video of him getting shot basically with a tear gas canister. And then when the other protesters tried to come to his aid, I mean, he had a 2-inch dent in his head. He's got possible brain damage. He's in a medically induced coma right now. Other protesters go to run to his aid, and the police are throwing flashbangs at them to scatter them so that they're not allowed to help him. I mean, I try to show young people that, you know, these are other young people like us that are out there, and this is someone who served his country, 2 tours in Iraq, and, you know, he fought for our right to peacefully assemble, and now they're not allowing us to do that. This is something that should really bother them, and it's something that they should really care about, much more so than I think anything politically that's going on. And as I use social media, Twitter, Facebook, I find that people respond very positively. It's almost as if the cable news outlets don't allow them to see the whole story, but social media really fills in the gaps for them. So we're really hoping that locally, the next time that we meet, we can have a really strong presence.
I want to turn to you, Professor O'Loughlin, and you're not only obviously a professor of political science, you are a personal activist as well, I know, and you apparently a couple of your kids are also involved in some Occupy Wall Street events. Need to say that for full disclosure. So what do you make of this movement? One, A, did it catch you off guard, and B, how do you assess the nature of this movement?
My sense is that it is essentially a class phenomenon. Whether or not it becomes or develops into a strong social movement is still to be seen, because it really requires a question of longevity. But it's a class phenomenon in the sense that it clearly is focused on the injustice involved with the inequality of wealth and income that has emerged over the course, certainly, of the past 30 years. And it is intergenerational. I think, as both your other guests have expressed, we have older generation of folks who are involved in this movement, plus young people. And my understanding as well is that the way this is working is a lot of the young people are the ones who are able to stay overnight, and then you have older folks joining them during the day and then going off to work and back home and so on and so forth. And that is the kind of dynamic involved with this. But I think that another piece of evidence in terms of its class dimension is we now have labor unions who are beginning to give support and trying to ally themselves with Occupy Wall Street. And there was a quote by, I think, Richard Trumka, who was saying that these folks are speaking to working class issues, that speaking in terms of the union, we've been trying to get the Obama administration to pay attention to this problem, and we've come upon deaf ears. So we feel they are speaking our language, and we should then provide some support. Help with more demonstrators, financial support, office support, and the like. So I think in that respect, it seems to me it is, again, this class issue. Again, the issues of race, the issues of gender discrimination, and those issues, in effect, are subordinated to the whole question of inequality in this country. I would add one other point real quickly. This is a movement that appears to be worried and concerned not simply with the recent problems of inequality, which are quite real, but instead with a structural matter. So the one piece of evidence, they've indicated to the labor unions apparently that, you know, they're happy to have coalesce with labor, but do not think that we're going to go out and campaign for Barack Obama. We are not involved. Our critique here is structural. We think that the political system is failing us. We think that capitalism is failing us, and that simple reforms are unlikely to address the matter, I think is their perspective.
Well, one of the things, as a matter of fact, there was a columnist who wrote, quote, "The reality is that Occupy Wall Street and the millions of middle Americans who make up the Tea Party are natural allies and should be on the same page about most key issues," end quote. You think that's true?
On the one hand, I think that there is a parallel to be drawn between the Tea Party movement and Occupy Wall Street on this point. Both movements are completely alienated from the political parties as the parties have developed. In other words, both movements distrust the establishment within, on the one hand, the Republican Party with regard to the Tea Party, and on the other hand, Occupy Wall Street with the Democratic Party. On the other hand, I think there's little connection because the Tea Party folks, if you look at who makes up those people, it's largely white, it's largely upper middle class. These are people who, what is their concern? We're being overtaxed. They're worried about their property holdings, whereas the movement, as we've already discussed, the movement for Occupy Wall Street is essentially ultimately a working class movement and a movement of middle class people who are losing their shirts. I mean, the foreclosures, in effect, the whole dynamic of foreclosures is breaking the back of the middle class. Once your house is gone, you now become a renter. And that's the trajectory right now. So I think that in that respect, they are on opposite ends of the class struggle. I would say one other thing that Warren Buffett put it pretty well, right? He said, in effect, that yes, there has been class warfare, and my class has won, right? And I think that puts it pretty well in terms of helping to get a sense of what this movement is about.
Well, one of the things that has struck me has been the reaction of certainly conservative media. On Fox News, for instance, they talk about some former Acorn leader playing a role behind the scenes. Of course, Acorn was the object of some serious attacks by Fox. False report that New Yorkers committed for change were paying people to protest. Rush Limbaugh, some quotes describing the protesters being pure, genuine parasites, bored trust fund kids, a parade of human debris, and perpetually lazy. Karl Rove, self-described socialists, anarchists, and even, quote, anti-Semites. And up in New York, rather Massachusetts, where we have Elizabeth Warren, who the former consumer person in Washington who's now running for the U.S. Senate. The Republican Party there in Massachusetts called her the matriarch of mayhem. Scott, I want to go to you first and say, when you hear these things, what's your reaction to them, and what do you make of why there's been such a strong reaction? I mean, we even had Eric Cantor, who's one of the minority leaders in the House, describe them as a mob at one point. How do you react personally, and then what do you make of this pushback?
It's a great question, Don. And the first thing I think of is talking to my wife on the way down here, who said, "Remember to tell them that we need moms out there. We need moms out there representing us." And my wife is actually creating a blog called the Casual Protester. And you know, you can label her what you want, but when we're marching down whichever street we're on our way to Times Square or whatever, you know, my wife will be looking at a restaurant and saying, you know, I really want to try that. Or she'll see a clothing store and say, oh, those shoes are fabulous. You know, we're just ordinary, formerly really upper middle class people that have watched our net worth just get sapped away by the system. And I work 65 hours a week and a half since I was 17. I paid my way through college. And I could point out the inequities in this system all day long. I'm sorry, I forgot the other part
of
the question.
So the pushback, I mean, there's this almost extreme
Here's what's really important. The pushback, I think, I mean, there's a lot of things you could say about it. You could get into a lot of detail. But ultimately, what is different, what is happening here, and this is, again, just my opinion, but it's also based on spending 30 hours in the tombs with the organizers of this movement, people that are living in the park and have come from other countries and states. These guys are living this movement, and there is a change taking place. And these young people, and I think there are many of us that share this with them and have felt a little alone in our own generation. I mean, technically, I'm a boomer, but I really don't relate to boomer values other than basic values on any level, and I never have. The inequities of the system have always bothered me. So these kids are—I shouldn't call them kids. These young people are number one, as Mike said, they're coming from everywhere. There's a ton of women involved in the movement. Everybody's welcome. There's people of all colors, all races. There's Buddhist monks, there's rabbis. I mean, everyone is there. Catholics and working class Italians and all sorts of New Yorkers and Irish people and Irish descent. But the what's happening here is that this is a movement away from the traditional way of living in America, the traditional way of doing business. And I think that's very, very frightening to people. It scares me a little bit because it's real change, and it's moving towards a more community-oriented society where the almighty buck is no longer the denominator of your success as an American. And I think for the traditional folks and the people that came before us, this is a very frightening prospect. I mean, they've bet the house, literally, on this system. And these kids, you know what? They're just not participating, and that's terrifying. You know, they're cutting up their – they're not taking credit cards. They're not taking out loans. Their dream is not necessarily to own a 4,000-square-foot house. They are much more community-oriented. They're much more people-oriented. And that's really the shift that's taking place here. And I think they're going to get attacked from all angles.
I want to just quickly, Mike, do you think this is going to be some kind of political movement that will translate into something like that? The Tea Party certainly had its impact in 2010. Real quick, do you think it will?
Yes, I do. I think, again, I try to follow what labor unions are doing because I think they have a long history of representation of working class people. And I think the fact that they have moved to try to coalesce with these folks, they're seeing something that is long standing, so that will that it, in the longer term, can open up the frame of political discourse that may be out there.
And Bobby, just real quickly, what do you see the future here?
Well, I think in the future we're going to see a different way of, I guess, corporations and how they're defined legally. Our young generation is no longer going to accept a legal corporate personality and their influence on the government. I think the Citizens United case is something that's not going to last much longer.
We've been speaking with Salisbury University professor Michael Laughlin, also Bobby Hajir, a political science student at Salisbury University, has been organizing some Occupy Wall Street protests here in Salisbury, and also Scott DeKuyper, he's a Lewis resident and has also been going up to the Occupy Wall Street protests in New York. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.